Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello and welcome. We're in Advent. And Advent, strangely enough, is supposed to be a fasting time in the Christian church. Well, that hasn't worked out too well, has it? Advent and Lent are supposed to be times when you sort of take yourself aside and renew vows, look at yourself again, clean things out, sort things through, in ready for the new birth at Christmas. And of course, for you and for me too, the new birth of the year, the solstice. But it's meant to be a time where you just sort of hold back. And I think it was probably very sensibly because you'd harvested everything and you wanted to make sure you had enough for a feast, I suppose. But I think it's really important to have these times when you contemplate, when you step back a little, when you don't just dive into the more treats, more treats, more treats. But having said that, of course, I love all the Christmas markets, so I'm probably talking out of my hat. But I always do try to have some sort of Advent practice. And having moved and having a whole new start as it is, the Advent practice is, for me, it's just reaffirming the old practice in a new home, in a new place to get things sort of wound up again. Anyway, do you have a winter practice?
I do. It's funny. Yeah, I do. My main kind of winter's practice at this time is the disassembling and reassembling of what I would call my ancestral bundle and you would call my witch's broom.
Oh, yes. Which is hanging over there because we're sitting in your lovely house. So you do. Oh, I beg your pardon. So I was talking about, what's that called?
That's a witch's ladder.
The ladder, that's right, beg your pardon. But the broom, I'm standing up looking, oh, yes, a broom with twigs. You actually have got a broom with twigs.
I have an actual broom with twigs, and every one of those twigs is again, we're back with a mnemonic device. It's a mnemonic device to remind me, if you like, and to put me in connection with, through a material reality, with each one of my allies. So that is made up of a twig gathering of all of the spirits that I work with and all of the kind of the threads, if you like, in twig form of my connections. So one in there might be, well, is to honour this place, and in fact one to honour this house, one to honour my upper world guide, one to honour my power animal, one to honour my body protector, one for each of the spirits of my temple, one for the place that is my Axis Mundi, so the place from which I come and go to the spirit world, and, you know, and many more. And they are tied in a bundle around a little bundle of me, which is so they are protecting me, literally. And then the staff part is, it on one level it represents my backbone, on the other it represents the masculine aspect into the feminine aspect, which is the bundle. So it's the kind of active nestling within the receptive that represents balance and being able to both give and receive, to be remembering of that all rights come with responsibilities, that alongside sovereignty there is always service. So it represents all of those things. And each year I will take it to pieces. Some years I'll burn the whole thing entirely if I feel like it needs replenishing or it's got too kind of, you know, dusty and manky or whatever. But some years I will simply open it all out and make sure that everyone is firstly still an ally I work with, or are there any allies who need to be
added?
So if I was in your position and I'd moved, I would probably burn the whole thing and start again. with twigs from my new local area.
Yeah. And do you select them or do they select you? Do you go out with the ally in mind or do they call to you?
A bit of both. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those practices that takes place, if you like, outside of time from the perspective of ordinary reality. So yeah. You go to either be called by or to call to particular twigs that speak to you of whatever it is they're going to represent. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the one that represents the deer with whom I work in my work as a drum maker, it looks just like an antler, etc. You know, lovely. There are kind of obvious reasons for some of them and less obvious for others. And each one of them is marked with either, so I've either cut off a little bit and put a symbol or even possibly a word on them, and some of them are bound with bits of thread. So, for example, the one in honour of my ancestry is wrapped with a red thread. So that is disassembled and reassembled each year. And with it, then, of course, back to so much gratitude, so much reverence, mm-hmm. so much kind of renewing of intention to pay attention, to work beautifully and soulfully and with as much gratitude and generosity as possible for and on behalf of the spirits, you know, trying to honour what they call for in partnership with the things that I selfishly, in inverted commas, want in my life.
Yeah.
And that's been a really big story for me actually recently, that the thing of the balance between how much work do you do because you're called to do it, and how much work do you end up doing and because it's your work, and then is there additional work that you end up doing because you've been trained in the hustle aspect mm-hmm. of our society?
Yeah.
And that it's become really, really, really clear to me that I will absolutely meet the appointments I'm here to meet. I will stand up and do what I'm called to do. I will do what's mine to do, but I will not engage in the hustle because the being in my den, in my nest part of my life matters too much for me.
Yeah.
And that I actually feel that I couldn't ever be what I need to be in order to do the work that I do unless I have the time that it takes to forge and maintain a relationship with the land where I live and with the spirits with whom I work. And
well, we're being helped in a strange domestic kind of way to move in, because we live in a semi-detached cottage, and on the other side of it there's an entrance into a market garden, and they have a lovely stall full of local food that they've grown. So yum. We're being fed from the land we live on because it's right behind our garden. You look over the gorgeous. Back gate and there are sheep and geese.
Yay! Oh, how perfect.
Can't yes. So I never have to pop out to the shops just for some supper, because I can just, as long as it's before dark, I can pot around and just put some coins in, pick up some eggs, pick up some pumpkins, pick up some onions, pick up some chard, whatever, and do a stir fry.
Oh, how completely gorgeous.
It's enchanting, isn't yeah. it? Yes.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of the things that I need to do that aren't work, which is grow my garden, grow our food.
Yeah. Almost makes up for the fact that we don't have our own groundwater now, and I miss that. Because you run the bath, it smells of chlorine.
Oh, nasty.
I suppose that everybody's does.
Yeah.
If they don't have their own groundwater. But I miss that. I miss drinking the water of the land. It was incredibly important to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredibly important to me.
Yeah.
There must be things, then I bet you there are things that you could do to kind of get rid of the chlorine. I don't know.
Of course you can filter things. You can buy an alkaline filter. But it gets so complicated and certain husbands who make the tea get so annoyed with it that there comes a point where it's working against you
mm-hmm.
if it becomes too much of a trouble, whereas you just bless the water.
Yeah.
Just bless the water and drop some holy water in it now and then as a gift and put up with it. And then after a few weeks you stop noticing anyway.
Really? Okay.
I think so, yeah. Haven't yet, but I will do so. It's only a couple of weeks now. So, yes, this is a time, in Christianity, you're meant to feel gravid. I love that word.
Okay, I love that word too. What does it mean?
It means waiting to give birth.
Gravid?
Yes, it's another word for pregnancy. But it's a sort of settling into yourself and in relationship with the fetus and in relationship with the upcoming motherhood, the new birth.
Nice. Okay. And Christians are supposed to be feeling gravid in preparation for the birth of Christ.
Yes. For the annual birth of Christ. Yes.
The annual birth of Christ.
It's funny though.
In this context, presumably we're not supposed to call Christ, we're supposed to call baby Jesus.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We're supposed to call him baby Jesus because we don't know when he got Christed. You see, some people say he was born Christed. Some people said he achieved Christhood, and some people he says he had Christ thrust upon him. What I love about that is the story in the Gospel of John, which is Jesus' first miracle, which is the wedding at Cana, where he turns water into wine. Mm. And the first words, in fact, the only words we hear Mary speak in the new, his mother, she says, they have no wine. And I just thought the first instruction of the passing of power, if you think about this going back to the first temple, the mother gives the power to the son who then marries and then has a child and the power goes on down there. But and he says to woman, what have I to do with you? My time has not yet come. But she's actually saying start now and start with joy. Start giving them a glass of wine. I don't know what the Baptists make of all that, but... But it's just lovely. It's just, and he says, no, I'm not going to do it. And she just says to the servants who are helping at the wedding, bring in some pots of water. So it's basically, you will.
Yeah. Is that really the only thing Mary ever gets to say, mm-hmm. according to the writings?
Oh,
of the...
No. She gets to talk to the Archangel Gabriel in the Gospel of Luke. But in John, that's the only thing she says. No, in Luke, she has great conversations with angels and with Elizabeth and other people. But Luke is the Gospel of the women. God is the spirit. Luke is the spiritual Gospels. 19 stories of the women, whereas there's 4 or 5 in the other Gospels.
Right. How many are there altogether in Luke?
19 stories.
So all the stories are the stories of the women?
Yes. No, not all the stories, but a good 50%.
Oh, cool. Luke was definitely a bloke, was he?
Well, I mean, they didn't know about transgender people back then so much as I don't know.
But,
I don't know.
T.S. Eliot.
Yes, Luke was probably.
Oh, T.S. Eliot, what am I saying? Oh, God.
George Eliot. Well, we don't actually, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Luke was a bloke, but I have no idea. So the only honest answer. But the thing is, the Gospels are wired together in a way. Irenaeus put it quite well, one of the Church Fathers, about there are 4 corners of the earth and 4 winds of heaven, and there have to be 4. And they literally are physical, psychological, spiritual, divine. So if you read them in that order, you grow up with Jesus, as it were.
In the 4 corners of our round earth,
do yes, you? Indeed. Well, they didn't know that then, did they?
Okay.
I think they were entitled to think it was flat back then.
I guess. I don't
know. Not everybody did.
No.
Not everybody did.
But has there not been any kind of reassessment of it since we discovered that the Earth is in fact not flat?
Well, I'm sure there's been reassessments, but you've still got the quotations from the 2nd century and you can't change those.
Right, yes, sir. But it sounds like they're a kind of a teaching.
Yes. Yes. It's basically saying there are four aspects of everything: earth, water, air and fire.
And spirit?
Air is spirit.
Oh, okay.
In this tradition.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Air is spirit, the heavens, the skies, and that's the Lucan Gospel.
Okay, that's really intriguing. There's apparently in the kind of Irish Celtic tradition, there are only 3 directions/elements in a way, sort of. Mm-hmm. In that there's by land, by air, by sea, because fire is implicit in all of them, and fire is spirit. Secretly hidden inside of everything.
Yes, I like that. No, fire in this tradition is the divine itself, the source of everything. Because basically, because the sun is the furthest thing, the sun pervades everything. Mm-hmm. But the sun primarily pervades the air, and the air also is pervaded by water. Mm-hmm. and then the water falls on the earth, and the earth is also pervaded by water. So each one blends into the other. And there's a whole cyclical thing, which I didn't know then, which, of course, the centre of the earth is hot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great continuing circle. It's like the serpent eating its head, if you like.
Mm. So fire is the divine, but air is the spirits, and that's seen as being different.
Yes, it is. Well, the spirits are like the allies and the power animals and the devas and the naiads and the dryads and the angels. Angels are, yes, how do I explain it? I haven't got the words for it. Mm. I know exactly what I mean, but the word explaining it is fascinating how difficult it is. Is spirit lesser than... No, spirit is the carrying force that sometimes veils the divine so that you can handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, good.
It's pretty hard to talk to no thing. It hasn't got a face.
Well, yes, it's like I was talking to somebody the other day about somebody was talking about their guide being the Archangel Metatron, who is the biggest spirit there is that we know of in legend and myth. Mm-hmm. And again, I always have to come back to say myth means perennial truth. We've been taught to think it means totally untrue.
Mm.
But no. But Metatron's enormous. I mean, Metatron's the size of a universe.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to be somebody's personal guide. However, a spirit, an angel associated to an archangel associated all the way up could be somebody's guide.
Mm-hmm.
But if Metatron actually spoke to us, the planet would explode.
It's all, excuse me, a metaphor.
It is all a metaphor, yes. And that's why sometimes it can be so difficult when you are leading a workshop, when you've got somebody who's very, what we call hoddy, and very tied down in the information of it, and wants it all defined. It's a metaphor! Yeah. It's a way of trying to make sense of something that is ineffable. I can make so much sense of it, now shut up and go away and do the work.
Yeah, tricky though, isn't it? When one person's metaphor is another person's literal truth.
Yes.
Or alternatively, where one person's metaphor seems like supreme arrogance to another person, or like rubbish, or whatever.
Well, that is an interesting one, yes, because the Metatron person, if you had got a guide that was so incredibly powerful, would it not be incumbent upon you to keep it to yourself?
To me, my suspicion is, obviously I do not know this person, and neither do I really know who Metatron is, if I'm honest.
Well, just think of a very, very large angel.
Okay, but to me that would... To say that someone's guide can't be Metatron would be a bit like saying that all the people who are named so can't be called Jesus. And that just because your guide names themselves as Metatron doesn't necessarily mean they are the one and only Metatron. And also, that person's understanding of who and what Metatron is might be completely different to yours. So in their mythology, Metatron might be a 6'4" angel, not the size of a galaxy.
Yep, no, I absolutely hear you, but she thinks it's the big bugger.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, you are like absolutely right about that. You can have a guide called God.
Yeah.
You have a guide called whatever.
Lots of people have got a guide called Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, and it probably isn't the one we talk about.
But it might be.
It might be an essence of him, absolutely. Yeah. That's the whole point,
yeah.
An essence. Because we are all one, we're all linked, so why would we actually have separate guidance?
Yeah.
I love the way you tie your hair up in a bun halfway through most of our chats.
Sorry.
I love it.
At some point it'll start tickling my face.
Yes, but I love how you do it. You just literally twist it around and it stays there.
Yeah.
I've never had that ability.
Your hair's not long enough.
Well, of course it isn't now, but when it was very, very long, it's very, very straight. So even in a ponytail, it would take notice of, but if you try and do anything with it, it would just fall out.
It's very straight and very fine. Yeah, so is mine, actually. But this is This is just a nifty twist.
You are a very clever one. You've probably got an archangel for a guide.
Oh, maybe. I don't know enough about them to comment.
So should we return to being gravid? It's such a beautiful word, I think. Pregnant with something, pregnant waiting for the new year. It's interesting, we have spring cleaning. But for me, this is actually the time of...
Me too, but for purely practical reasons. It's so funny. We always have a frenzy of cleaning in this house at this time of year because the sun is so low that we actually get some light through the windows.
Ah.
And so it shines on all the things that, you know, well, the windows themselves, for example, that you haven't necessarily noticed have acquired grime since the last time you did it. And all of a sudden we'll be going around going, oh my goodness, have you seen that? And cleaning it. It is hilarious and it happens every autumn. And it feels really right to me for the same reason as reassembling my ancestral bundle, my broom. Yeah. This feels like, you know, I'm going to be doing my damnedest to hibernate, basically.
Yes.
And for me, that's the thing that takes place kind of after Christmas. I'm not hibernating my way through all the parties and all the socialising of both, the time of, you know, glorious bonfires and roasted chestnuts and the winter solstice and the inevitable feasting around Christmas time, which for me is when the sun moves again. But then after that, rest. And I want to rest in somewhere, in a den, if you like to use the animal metaphor. I want to rest in a den that I have licked clean so that it's a joy and a deeply nourishing pleasure to just hunker down and not move again, ideally, until Imok.
Do you do workshops really in the winter?
Yes, but no, but I do my hardest not to do anything much in January, and I certainly don't run workshops in January, for many reasons. Firstly, because it is my intention to hibernate.
Mm.
Secondly, because I really do need to get on with some writing. And thirdly, because... Actually, half the time, anything I try and book in January will be cancelled because the lanes will be too icy they're never gritted and you can't invite people up a dangerous, slidey hill, basically.
No. Oh, well, you can't. It takes me back to when I learnt Reiki 1, when I first, 6 months after Henry died, and I first made my tentative steps into healing. And it was a lady who lived 2 miles away and we had snowfalls. And it was lunch to share. I'd never been to a workshop before.
Wow.
And I didn't know what lunch to share made. So I made a great big lasagna and a Le Creuset. And the day before, because I was so keen to get to this workshop, I walked the Le Creuset there in a bag.
Wow.
In the snow. Fantastic. To time it. Because I was not missing that workshop. And she was utterly shocked that this woman turns up on her doorstep at 5 o'clock the day before with a ruddy great Le Creuset. I didn't know what you meant by food to share, so I made a lasagna.
Aww.
And of course, the next day it melted enough for me to drive. But I will always remember that work because it was that commitment and it's this level of commitment. I don't know if it's just wired into me in my astrology, but I find it so strange that people don't have it.
Yeah, me too. Oh, so bizarre. Yeah. And that our, in our culture, our word doesn't seem to be our bond. And no. I was so completely raised with, your word is your bond. If you give your word, if you say you're gonna do a thing, bloody well do it.
Yes, or come up with a very good reason why not and explain it beforehand.
Yes, I fell down and broke my neck. Yes. Will do, thank you. But not, I couldn't be asked.
No.
It was a bit wet outside.
Yes. Yes, I know when we... I first started studying Kabbalah. We lived in Birmingham and the only class was in London. Mm. 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, 3 terms a year. 8 years we drove down to London every Thursday. Mm. I really don't think we missed more than a couple for going on holiday each year. Mm. And it was a 2.5 to 3 hour drive down and a 2.5 to 3 hour drive back. And my husband would drive down and I would drive back. I got the better thing because he would fall asleep and I was coming back up whole swathes of the motorway with no lights and just looking at the sky.
Lovely.
So it was extraordinary, but it had to be done. And I was actually, he went away for a few weeks and I still drove down and back on my own because I wanted it.
Yeah.
I wanted that teaching. I knew it was life-changing and valuable. And even if it was just a fairly duff meeting, just going and being with the companions.
Yeah.
I'm saying to people when I did the Sacred Magic of the Angels online workshop a few weeks ago, and again a couple of weeks ago, I had a day workshop on Zoom. And when you have a Zoom workshop, oddly enough, it seems to be just as easy to observe the group soul forming. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Totally know what you mean. Yes, absolutely.
With the Sacred Magic of the Angels, we were learning the techniques for how you communicate with angels and how you ask for prayers to be taken up clearly so they can be answered very clearly. And people were seeing little miracles the whole time, whether they'd written the letter or not. And they were going, I don't understand. I was going to write to Raphael, but I didn't. But my hands got better.
Wonderful.
But I didn't have to write. So that means I don't have to write. And I went, no, it doesn't. It means that right now you're in a soul group that the angels are listening to and working with and are happy with. Yes, of course you've got to do the work as an individual, but this is why groups are so valuable.
Oh, totally.
And for those of you who are listening, because we're now still in Devon, we've got a lovely house with a big room, I am going to start another physical Kabbalah group once a month. So if anybody's listening who is within reasonable travelling time of Hatherley in Devon, please let me know and please come along and try it, because it's everything I am and everything I teach. And if you like the podcast, you'll like it.
Cool. Can I just skip onto a subject from that, which has been the subject of much discussion on a friend's newsfeed recently, of loads and loads and loads of practitioners all talking about the thorny issue of payment.
Oh.
Can I invite all of the people who are thinking of attending Maggie's thing, please just pay what she asks. No matter how dreadful your circumstances, those of us who are offering this workout also have to live. And we're not magically sustained by some kind of bursary from the universe that puts funds in the bank account. We participate in the mortal realm of money in, money out. And it's tremendously easy to look at the likes of us. Now both of us live in idyllic looking little bloody gorgeous cottages in beautiful, beautiful Devon. And we do our work. And the work that we do is the work that we do. There's no going off to Sainsbury's to stack shelves by night to keep the money coming in. And it's been really spelled out on this thread that I've been a part of on Facebook, how completely it is the case that if you offer discount, people will tend to take it, even those people who
pay more,
well, who typically earn far more than you or I have ever seen.
Yeah.
And that often you'll also get people just asking for discount because they have what I know you would call a poverty mentality. And in fact, they're not poor at all. And they're certainly not as poor, in inverted commas, as you or I. And I know that we both totally acknowledge that we have
everything we need.
Everything we need and blessings by the millionfold, but not loads of money. And that the likes of you or I went and drove up and down the motorway to Bristol, or, you know, to all sorts of places in my case, but a lot to Bath and a lot to Somerset, which isn't far, but never once did either of us go, oh, can I pay a bit less?
No.
What I did was, can I pay in small amounts over a very large amount of time?
Yes.
And I was allowed to do so, and I was not charged more for the privilege of being able to pay over a large amount of time. And it's something that Fergus says a lot, having he travelled to Peru and literally almost, you know, almost starved at one point whilst there, because he'd basically spent all of his money on getting there to go and study with a shaman who he absolutely would never have dreamt of saying, oh, can I have a discount? Because, you know, obviously that chap's got far less than
anyone
over here. And that if the work is worth what it's worth, then those of us who offer it shouldn't be put in the position where we have to choose to not be able to meet some of the needs which those asking for discount would consider their right.
Mm.
And altogether, too often, we are. And that, you know, it's. I remember once, God, this really stuck in my craw and I've never forgotten it. I remember once being asked for discount after a shamanic healing rather than negotiated beforehand. Ooh. And the reason given was, I've got a new foal along with my many other horses and they are on very expensive supplements. And of course, like everyone else on this bloody thread, I said, yes, of course you can. Where what I should have said was, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
Your foal's on supplements? My children are on macaroni cheese 3 times a week because we don't have the money for anything more than that.
Yeah.
How dare you ask me for discount based on that?
Yeah.
But of course I didn't.
No. No. It's really scary standing up about money. I'm getting much better at it because there is a rule that is in my tradition, which is for a Kabbalah group, you do not charge.
Right.
So if somebody...
that was a rant worth nothing.
No, no. Because it gives me, if you like, my weapon,
mm-hmm.
which is I do seminars and workshops. If you can't afford them, you can afford to read one of my books on Kabbalah and then you can study with me for free every single Tuesday night. If you can't afford it, you can borrow it from a library.
Yeah.
Take that information in and come and learn with me for free. I do ask for donations when people are willing and ready to, twice a year I say, if you feel like donating, and people do. And sometimes it's a fiver and sometimes it's £100. That's very nice. So that's an addition. But when I do a workshop, I nowadays go, that is my fee because you can have me for free and you can't be asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's utterly astonishing how many people will come on a workshop and say, I really, really like that. Can I come to your Tuesday? And never show up.
Mm.
And obviously, you know, they moved on to something else, which is absolutely fine. But I was never charged for the... We travelled down to London and back, and that all the petrol. We were never asked to pay a penny.
Okay, I was asked for many thousands for my training.
Oh, well, for training, yes, but this was the evening. When we went to workshops with Warren, or we went abroad with Warren, you paid through the nose.
Mm.
But in his case, on a Thursday night, you just showed up. So I do like to have a free option, but after that, no, you're paying me.
Yeah.
And I still don't charge quite enough, but somebody very wise said to me, given the way people are around this, put your for your discount price, have the price you would normally charge for full money, and double the price of your workshop.
Phew, how did that go?
What?
My goodness.
Yeah. So even if somebody wants the discount, you get enough.
Mm.
But it's so hard, and I think it's harder for women.
Mm.
We are still trained to be the nurturers. Well, we are naturally nurturers, and so is the feminine in men, of course. But I once lost a friend because she said, you charge for healing? Well, no, I didn't charge for the healing, but I charged for my time and my training and the mortgage and the heating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I also, when I was living in London, we didn't have a place where people were willing to travel. So I had the Savoy. I would just go and sit in the Savoy on from 10 o'clock till noon. And somebody would come and see me at the Savoy because I was basically hiring the Savoy for 20 quid.
What was the 20 quid?
Oh, coffee and cake.
Right.
Coffee and biscuits, actually. And they would top it up for you. And you were sitting in this most beautiful surroundings. You know, and actually people go, I met a lovely comedian called Paul Tonkinson. He's pretty well known and he was the backup for Michael McIntyre on all his big tours. And he's such a nice bloke.
Mm.
And he converted to Catholicism when we met and I had cancer. So and he gave me a lift home from a gig and we just talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And he said, and he's very northern.
Mm-hmm.
Northern bloke people tend to be very, you know, you don't do anything more. What's it? She's no better than she should be. That strange phrase. And the next time I was down in London, he kindly took me out for lunch. And the time after that, he said, you choose. And I said, brunch at the Savoy. It cost the same amount as where he'd taken me for lunch. And it was just gorgeous. Bless him, he turned up in a tie he'd obviously not worn for generations, which wasn't needed. But it was just lovely to have this bloke going, this is totally accessible, isn't it?
Mm.
It's totally reasonable. And I don't see why you shouldn't go somewhere where you're going to get fabulous food and wonderful service.
Yeah, I guess.
It turns out it's the Sam Vimes story of prosperity from the Terry Pratchett's books. He talked about the wealthy never spend any money because they bought one good thing.
That was quoted on this thread. The story was it? Of the boots.
Yes, yeah. Sam Vimes' boots, yes.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know the story, go on then, tell it.
Well, it's basically that he was always broke, so he got old second-hand boots, which he lined with cardboard.
Mm.
Whereas the woman he ends up marrying, Lady Sybil Rankin, has got the most magnificent boots that she's had for about 50 years and just gets resold every now and then.
Mm.
And it was just this thing of observing that the wealthy don't want, because they can afford the good thing in the first place, they don't have to
shell out to constantly replace it.
Mind you, on the other hand, Sam Vimes, with those boots, knew every single street in Ankmore Park. So if anybody blindfolded him and led him down the street, which happened in a couple of the stories, to take him to some prison or something, he knew exactly where he was. Because his feet would tell him.
Yeah, he'd feel the cobbles through the cardboard.
So there's always good and bad in both. You know, it's always yes and, isn't it?
It is yes and.
But it is true. And I found some old... when we were clearing out my mum's photograph albums, there were some old ones of me at my first and second ever gymkhanas. And I was wearing my Auntie Beryl's hacking jacket.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it was a classic style. It wasn't in the current style. So, of course, I think I was 12, I felt a bit, you know, but looking back at it, you think, that's a really fine jacket. Mm. Wish I'd still got that jacket. Probably still.
And to be clear, sorry to interrupt your hacking jacket, but to be clear, I know it is true of both of us. If somebody comes along to our workshops and they actually earn less than we do, of course they can have a discount.
Oh, yes.
Of course they can.
But? But not just every... I had a woman turn up for a healing session who negotiated a discount before. She turned up in a Porsche and it was new.
Yeah, I rest my case.
Yeah. Well, her excuse was because she bought the Porsche, she didn't have any money, which is like the lady with the foal. Yes, it's always yes and. But it's also about respecting the work.
Yeah.
So respect the work. The spiritual work is the most important work you will ever undertake because it goes on into future lives.
I'm sorry about my dog. How are we doing for time? Is he telling us we need
just
to be closing.
That is exactly how we're ending it. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you value something, value it.